This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by ShopAndroid.com, your number one source for Android smartphone accessories. To save 10% on your entire order, enter code AC10 at checkout. Orders over $50 ship free, and international shipping is available. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 193 for Friday, July 11th, 2014. How's it going? I'm Phil Nickinson. I don't know. Hi. I'm just here today. It's Friday. I've had a good work week. I've done a lot of stuff and not done a lot of stuff and get to hang out with these guys. So let's just go through it. Jerry Hildenbrand from the site.
Howdy, everybody.
Andrew in Seattle.
Hey, how's it going?
Alex is like, I'm next. Oh, I'm not next.
Got me that, Phil.
I saw it. Alex Dobie in England.
Hey, everyone.
So welcome to the show. If it's your first time, we do this every week, more or less, especially in the summertime. It can get a little weird. We do it live. We do it on video most of the time. And we might or might not be doing it with pants.
Might not.
So what's going on? It's been a good, fun week. I kind of feel like we were trying to figure out what to talk about this week. And it's like, ooh, just kind of more of the same from last week. And it's not bad, but we've talked a lot about Android Wear and a lot about the LG G3. And I think we're going to do it more and again. And apparently the stupid camera was locked on me again. Ah! Somebody say something.
Something.
See? There we go.
There we go.
Stupid Hangouts, if you click on yourself, which is easier to do than you'd think, it locks on you. And unfortunately, It locks on me and not like somebody, not me.
Don't worry, it'll change how it works.
My mouse pointer's a hammer, and I click on your face all the time.
Oh, man. Yep, see, there's everybody. There's only three Q&A questions saying that. Now I'm just going to stick it on me just to mess with them. How about that? Because I didn't shave today. Keep doing that. Now you got to look at this the whole time. I'm just going to stand right there. Everybody listening to the audio version's like, come on, let's go. So I want to start by talking about something a little different this week. Jerry and I were talking about this before the show. I don't know, it's not even phone related when you stop and think about it, but like privacy is a big deal. I don't even know if I consider this a privacy thing, though. Google and the right to be forgotten. It's been a big thing in the news lately, and today Google, it was David Drummond, actually, who's their senior vice president of corporate development and their chief legal officer. From time to time, he pins blog posts on things. And today they had an op-ed in bunch of newspapers in Europe. Was it The Guardian? One in Germany, and I'm not even going to try to say it. One in France and one in Spain, talking about this ruling that says Google must, if requested, or demanded, I guess that too, must take down links to content that, you know, people don't like for any number of reasons. And it's called the right to be forgotten, so that this old stuff that might or might not be relevant or important or, you know, just damning in some way can be stripped out of the search engine, even if it's still alive in whatever the source material it is. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit. And Alex, I know you're not really European because you're from the UK, and don't they look down on you because of that?
It depends who you're talking about. I don't know. I think I'm going to be very safe and say we're all friends in Europe, and there are no divisions whatsoever.
No borders. Everybody just hugs and
friends and happiness and all that stuff.
I get where all this is coming from. I mean, look, I don't necessarily want the things I did, 20 years ago, even online. And was I online 20 years ago? Yeah, I must have been in some respect. I don't want that to like floating to the top of the search results if you search for my name. But, and maybe it's a U.S. thing, but, if I'm charged with a crime and that, so be it, right? That should, and it's in the news, then those news results should be at the top of the search. I get that.
And it turns out that a lot of the requests to take things down are for old legal cases or accused legal news about accused legal cases or things when, you know, people were at former employers and the employer had legal troubles, or there was, you know, the whole thing stemmed from some guy who had this house foreclosed on, and, you know, those kind of things, you know, taking them out of Google is kind of a band-aid way to try to get rid of it when, you know, if the source material, the archive of that stuff still exists, that sucks for you, but that's not Google's problem. That's not my problem. If I can find it, you know, if it happened, it happened.
And then you have the whole Streisand effect, which is, you know, in, not so much in the result of this ruling, but in the run-up to it, when it's somebody saying, you know, somebody sues and says, I want Google to take this down because it says disparaging things about me. And in the meantime, by bringing it up again, they're going to talk about you more with your name. Let me read some of this op-ed that they put out today. The European Court found that people have the right to ask for information to be removed from search results that include their names if it is, quote, inadequate, irrelevant, or no longer relevant, or excessive. In deciding what to remove, search engines must also have regard to the public interest. These are, of course, very vague and subjective tests. The court also decided that search engines don't qualify for a journalistic exception. This means that The Guardian could have an article on its website about an individual that is perfectly legal, but we might not legally be able to show links to it in our search results when you search for that person's name. It's a bit like saying the book can stay in the library, it just can't be included in the library's card catalog. I mean, I get it, but
so there, it's kind of like the courts are acknowledging that this isn't getting rid of the source material. So, you know, what if, you know, crazy hypothesis that Google's no longer the leading search provider in 10 years, and all of a sudden Bing has 90% of the search results. Ooh. Now they're going to go take down, make Bing take down all of these links as well. I mean,
it's not just Google. It applies to all search engines that operate in Europe. So it's only, you know, it's only significant with regards to Google because Google has such a massive share of the search market in Europe. And of course, other search providers are going to have to find a way to, you know, interpret these very sort of vague words, inadequate, irrelevant, no longer relevant, excessive. And you could even have a situation where, you know, certain things are censored on one engine and not on the other. And, you know, it's...
Right. The point I'm trying to get at is that Google is the leading search provider, so they're putting all of their time and money into getting those search results correct. That's not changing the fact that all of this stuff still exists and could be indexed and shown by somebody else as well. And now there are different plugins that you can get to unhide links and show, you know, when links were removed from search results in Europe and things like that.
Well, I mean, this is the other thing. If you want to search without these results being included, you go to the Google US site, and that's just a single URL that you enter. It's, you know, it's not difficult to get around. And even if there was some kind of location-based blocking where any European IP address had to go through this filtered search engine, then, again, there are easy ways around that. You have proxies and stuff like that. I mean, I guess it comes down to the idea that information is by its nature leaky and that it gets everywhere, and that, you know, you can try and control what gets out there through the leading search engines, but like Andrew was saying, the information is still out there, and, you know, you can try as much as you want to plug all the different ways that unfavorable information about you could get out there, but I think ultimately it is kind of futile.
I did mock trial in high school, and this legendary story of this guy who was a year or two older than me, he was in the middle of a trial and it's not going well. He says, "Objection, Your Honor." Judge looks down. He says, "Yes." He says, "Well, the witness is testifying to facts that are detrimental to my case." And it's almost sort of the same thing, only not really. It's out there. You did it. What, I mean, for whatever, you know, whether you did anything bad, I, you know, it could be any number of things, but I mean, all Google is doing is indexing. And not just Google. All a search engine is doing is indexing, right? It's going out and finding this information that's there. Why are they not saying, okay, you have the right to go to this source that is actually the source of the information and demanding or requesting that they remove it?
Would be the right way to go about it. I mean, I know that in the U.S. we have really strong laws against libel, so you can't post libelous things that are, you know, factually untrue that, you know, make you look bad. But I don't know if that's exactly the same case in Europe. But the same thing applies where you need to go towards the people that actually posted the things that you think are making you look bad. It's not Google's job to really police what shows up and what doesn't. They're ranking it based on, you know, relevance. So obviously if it's showing up in the results, it's relevant to somebody. If, you know, that's why Google's determined to give you the results.
Yeah. And I mean, we could get into the like First Amendment public figure stuff, but again, we're talking Europe. We're not even talking the US. Back from the op-ed, Google says, when it comes to determining what's in the public interest, we're taking into account a number of factors. These include whether the information relates to a politician, celebrity, or other public figure, if the material comes from a reputable news source and how recent it is, whether it involves political speech, questions of professional conduct that might be relevant to consumers, the involvement of criminal convictions that are not yet spent or, you know, adjudicated or whatever, and if the information is being published by a government. But these will always be difficult and debatable judgments. I mean, on one hand, when they say that, it's almost like, well, look, that's what we do when we're ranking search results anyway, right? I mean,
if it wasn't relevant to somebody and Google determined that it wasn't relevant to show up when you search for Phil Nickenson when you're in France, then it wouldn't show up in the first place. So the fact that it's coming up, you know, Google does a pretty good job about finding out what's relevant, what should be on those first 3-4 pages of Google results. It's, you know, it's up there for a reason. It's not there to slander Phil when you search for his name in France.
And there's the very vague idea of what is excessive or not. That goes outside of whether it's relevant or recent, which, you know, Google does a fairly good job of judging itself based on its various algorithms and stuff. How would you reasonably judge that? It's very difficult.
You know, I'm going to be, and I want Jerry to weigh in here in a minute because I know what Jerry thinks about a lot of things. But
good.
I'm actually searching for my full name right now, which gets a little interesting with me because I'm the third generation of me here in town, actually, in the same city, my father and my grandfather. I'm on page 4, and I haven't actually found anything with my real name. Oh, there I am, finally. Some reverse telephone lookup. Interesting. I think where it really starts to concern me is my kids, because they're going to grow, you know, they're already growing up online and not of their own volition. It's of me posting pictures or writing about them or whatever. There's that. And then just, I don't know. I mean, I get it, but at the same time, there should be some recourse to being able to say, hey, Google, I get it, but, you know, this is something that happened a long time ago. You know, it's like if bankruptcies are public record, and I wouldn't surprise me in some respect they are. I just don't know. If bankruptcies are public record, do you want that showing up, you know, 20 years later when it's been taken care of, right? Or the question is, how high would that show up, I guess? I don't know.
Jerry, well, still show up if you went to go get another loan from another bank and they know that.
Well, I mean, they will have information on file anyway through credit agencies and stuff.
Right. You know, so the question at that point is that public record or is that just record that Google happened to scrape? Jerry, I want to hear where you stand on this because Jerry's an enigma wrapped in a piece of bacon or something. And I can never quite peg where he's going to come out on something.
I think in any time you restrict or alter access to the truth, you're playing a dangerous game. I mean, it's not the same, but my mind always just goes back to, you know, Orwell. We were always at war with Oceania. We were never at war with Oceania. I understand that you think the bankruptcy, that was a good, really good way to put that. Because that doesn't matter. There's no need for anybody to be able to look at that and judge you based on something that has no bearing on anything today. But that's me and you. I mean, do we want kids not to be able to find out that Tony Blair and George Bush started a war? Whichever side you're on about the war, what's wrong with not, you know... I'm torn. I'm really torn because the truth needs to be available. The problem is a lot of it isn't truth. That I get. And that's where I think the time and the money should have been spent. Instead of the easy way, go after Google, one entity, and pretend none of this exists, is easier than going after each and every individual that may have something that needs to come down. But that just because it's easier doesn't mean it's the way it should have been done.
Instead of going after the sources, they go after the indexers, which I get, because right. That's like one place that all this information is being brought to, or you know, six places where all this information is being brought together. So that's who you make responsible for you know, cleaning it up, I guess. But yeah.
And, well, you know, I'm not saying that it will ever go to the length I said about, you know, the Iraq war, but it could. This is the first step towards that kind of information censorship. And I don't trust politicians in this world to always make the right decision, and they've already started.
And I think it's, you're talking about the question of truth. It isn't necessarily truth. It's, you know, relevance and not even accuracy, but there's the term inadequate, which, I mean, what does that mean in terms of, in relation to information on the internet? It's, you know, you talk about half truths. It's very difficult to quantify that. The other point is we're looking at information about individuals here, about presumably private citizens, not public figures. So the other side, you know, to play devil's advocate, the other side of that would be to say that it would apply more to someone that's not in the public eye as opposed to, you know, a politician or a celebrity.
And it's my understanding that's the way it is now.
Yeah.
You know, but I just don't think it'll stay that way. I'm cynical, maybe it's I'm a little older, but I have just seen this sort of thing go the wrong direction, and it worries me.
You know, take that one further. You see news stories every day of, here's somebody who did something stupid on Twitter or Instagram, or, you know, you see it, you know, you see it every July 4th or every New Year's, you know, 72 people who think that the U.S. is 2014 years old. And you saw it this week with the Steven Spielberg Triceratops picture.
And I'll agree that there's nothing bad's going to happen to society if you put a stop to that.
No, but
Representative Wiener showing his privates to staffers came out through social media and Google. That's the kind of stuff we have to make sure never gets blocked, because that's important.
Well, and he is a public figure, but my question out of that was, at what point are we all public figures because we're posting so much stuff publicly, right?
And I think that's the point that Phil brought up about, you know, his kids are going to grow up, their entire lives are going to be archived on the internet if they're not careful about what they choose to put on there and not put on there. And I think that maybe this is kind of a, you know, we're talking about a lot of people, you know, making these requests to take things down that did not live their entire lives on the internet. Of course, you know, these people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s that, you know, have not had that in their life the whole time. And this is a ruling where we're talking about things that could be a lot different when people that are Phil's kids' age now end up being, you know, turning 30 and 40, and maybe they'll have a little bit of a different perspective on what's important to keep on and offline.
It goes back to a quote from, I think it was Eric Schmidt a long time ago, saying that essentially in the future, people who have grown up doing that, who had information on their, you know, on them online at all times, would eventually go to lengths like changing their name when they graduate. College, university, or whatever, in order to essentially start fresh in a professional capacity and not have this information sort of following them around for the rest of their lives. And that's a very extreme example to give, but it's kind of a different solution to this this problem that seems to have arisen.
It's, yeah, you know, just something a little different this week, but very, very important. I don't know, something to think about more, and just as we keep doing this and, you know, as we have these phones in our hands, and especially, you know, I'm back on the L preview, by the way, and looking at just how quickly stuff comes up, and I'm back on the Google launcher with it. And, you know, I don't know, let's type my name and see what comes up just right here on my phone. All right. All right. Phil Mickelson. Great. Thanks. Malatesta.
Well, you know, it's gonna, finding a lot of wrong tweets whenever he wins a tournament, right?
Yeah, I know. Right. I don't know. It's interesting stuff. I wanted to talk about that some. If you haven't read the op-ed, go read it. It's absolutely worth thinking about. All right, where should we start? Android Wear or the LG G3? We're going to, you know.
I need to take a Quaalude before we go any further.
Careful, that's public knowledge now.
You're right. I'm going to get it freaking.
Do you feel like a public figure?
I think we're all public figures. I've done a lot of stupid things, but I did them. And if you know that I did them, that's because I was stupid enough to do them.
All right, let's talk some more about Android Wear. I kind of feel like I want to, I don't know, like we should have had some sort of public forum about it. I mean, if you're listening live, start throwing stuff in the Q&A, telling us what you think about Android Wear, if you've got it, if you've got a watch. Because, you know, Jerry and I have been using it for 2 weeks now. Alex has had it for a week, almost a week.
A week today.
All right, so let's let you talk about it for a minute. Where are you at? Yeah. Which watch did you get? Which are you using?
So I got the LG G watch. Here it is. You can see it. It looks like an LG G watch. And published my thing today about the software side of that.
Good job on that. Yes. I want to interrupt
you to say. Thank you, Jerry. the main takeaway from that, I think, is, in my opinion, the software is further along than the hardware. Or at least the software is less problematic than the hardware. I think the core experience with the notifications and the apps, the card layout is well done. You know, it's a solid UI for that kind of device. Some things to be better. I would like a way, sort of the way you have now with the Pebble, the latest update, to be able to preview stuff that you swiped away, especially when it's so easy to swipe things away. I think maybe Phil and I are a little bit disagreement on this, but I would also like a way to view apps more easily. Not necessarily a traditional launcher layout, but right now you have to swipe through a bunch of menus to get to your list of apps if you don't want to talk to your watch. And of course, you don't always want to talk to your watch, especially if you're in a public place. So easier access to apps, especially when you're asking developers to invest time and money in making watch apps. You want them to be front and center.
Let's stop there and talk some more about that. Because my thinking is, this is an accessory for your apps to use, to leverage, right? Even though it's running essentially a full build of Android, and we can talk some more about the differences if we want. But it's not the same as having a phone right there on your wrist, only smaller, and you want to be able to launch apps and have a launcher and have a keyboard.
Sorry, go ahead, Jerry.
I use iFit and Wemo to turn my light switches on and off, and I can do that from my watch. And, dude, that's cool that I can tap the face of my watch and my porch light comes on. But it's not so cool that I have to tap, swipe, scroll, 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 tap,
yep,
scroll, 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 tap, tap, swipe. Screw that. I'm just going to use my phone.
So my question is, would it be better to have, is having it in a traditional app paradigm where, you know, here's a list of apps on your watch, is that the best way to do it, or is there a better way to go about it, whether it's geofencing, whether it's voice commands? Is there some other way maybe that we're just not thinking about because we're hung up on this being a full Android build on a watch?
Well, we already have voice activation. Of course, you can say start whatever the app is in the Apple Start, and you do have the list of apps that if you tap the watch face, scroll down, there it is under, you know, at the bottom of a very long list. I think it's just, at the most basic level, it's having an easier way to access that list. Maybe instead of being at the bottom of, you know, this long list of voice commands, you have it at the bottom of all your notifications, because, I mean, what else is going to be there? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. On the Gear Live, there's a button on the side. And if you tap it while the watch is off, the watch comes on. If the watch is on and you long press it, it brings up the settings menu. Man, wouldn't it be great if you could long press it to bring up the start menu and there's your list of apps?
Or just make it, you know, it's always the option. You just make it a setting, and, you know, that isn't always the answer to everything. But if you could, you know, like you can on, I think there was at least one generation of iOS that let you do that. Here's a button, you know, let's let you do whatever you want with it. I think the GS5 Active does that as well. Is this multi-purpose button that, you know, it's a convenience factor, press it, it does whatever you want. Maybe something like that is the answer, I don't know. But it just seems like if you're asking developers to put time and money into making apps for it, you know, make the apps easier to see. Because if you can see the apps, you're more likely to use them.
Yeah.
I do like the way that you can have your Android Wear components just bundled in your phone app.
That is very smart.
I love not having to install apps to my watch.
Has Evernote fixed that yet? Because Evernote put out a whole separate app for that.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's been a couple. There's, you know, the standalone calculators and stuff like that. And those are about the only ones that need to be, you know, separate from your phone.
Do they?
And we get back to why, if we get back to why this isn't on any other platform, I think that's a big part of it. The fact that you can just bundle Android apps in with other Android apps, and then it's a seamless experience on your watch and your phone.
When I first saw how that worked, I said, well, I was wrong, and this isn't going to be on iOS anytime soon.
We need a better way to discover apps as well. I know Google has its kind of curated list you get to through the Android Wear section or through the app, but I don't know. I mean, searching in Google Play is still a mess.
Too much content.
Yeah. Let's see, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24, 27, 30, 33, 36 apps in there now are in that curated. But, you know, that's absolutely not everything that's out there.
Yeah, I think our total list is over 50 now of anyone that, you know, is used by more than one person anyways.
So going back to sort of pain points with the with that, just Android Wear in general, this is kind of hardware related, but I think, you know, firstly, the screens need to be better. We can all agree. I think the screen on the G Watch, the screen on the Gear Live, they're not the best. They could do with being brighter. You know, we're in the middle of the summer now, and of course, you can't necessarily see them outside in direct sunlight, but that's going to be an issue all year round. I think they're just not really bright enough to use outside.
So here's the thing on that. Jerry and I have been testing, and I think we all figured out what Jerry's problem was. I cranked up the brightness on the G Watch all the way, and I've had it there for, you know, basically 3 days now, right? I don't know if you can see that any better. So I've had it on since about 7 o'clock this morning. It's now 3:30. I'm at 63% with the brightness turned up all the way. There's Jerry.
Well, but you're right. I think we figured that out. And if you're curious, I subscribe to a bunch of Google groups with instant notification, and because I'm a nerd and I want all this nerd stuff right away. And my Gmail lights up probably 200 times more a day than anybody else's or anybody should. And that kills your watch because it lights the whole screen up.
So try turning it up if you've got a watch and it's just not bright enough for you.
And that sort of leads me to another problem, the fact that we need to do that.
Yeah,
I don't understand why these watches don't have ambient sensors so you can have auto brightness, which wouldn't eliminate the issue with the screen, but it would make it easier to deal with.
No idea.
Hopefully that space below the screen on the 360 is an ambient light sensor. We can hope.
I'm just wondering if that would have made it too thick, too big bezel, if there's an actual reason that LG and Samsung didn't want to include one.
Well, I'm sure there is, and that's probably it, or just if they thought it just wasn't necessary at all.
No. Well, rethink that. It's necessary.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, the brightness was interesting. Hey, by the way, the LG G Watch has one extra step of brightness than the Gear Live.
It goes to 11.
Yeah, it goes to 6. I don't know. That was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something that the OEM can dictate or if it's hardware based or what, but yeah, it's the first thing I looked at because I didn't notice it when I had that one in San Francisco to play with.
So I assume the Live only goes up to what, 5?
5.
Okay. But so maybe it's something to do with cranking the brightness up an extra level so that you maybe lose some contrast, but it's also brighter. Because I know some phones have modes like that. The GS5 has one that only ever gets activated in bright sunlight that reduces the contrast but makes it much brighter. So it could be something like that.
Side by side, I still think the Gear Live is a brighter screen, even with the extra level of brightness.
Yeah.
Which also is going to be part of battery life issues.
And they both have very different temperatures, too. If you stick them side by side, I'm not sure if I prefer one over the other. You get used to whatever it is that you're looking at pretty quickly. I don't know. I'm as down as I was on the G Watch at first because it's very plain, and I think I kind of said this in the review that, you know, it grew on me, and You know, the strap helped. If you haven't swapped straps, swap. Absolutely.
That band you have on yours makes it gorgeous.
Yeah. What are you using now?
Right now I have the white G-Watch on because it's white and I like white shiny things. Andrew's convinced me that it's going to turn gray.
We'll see.
It's going to turn some color other than white.
Hey, do me a favor and do one of your little microscope pictures of that display and
I will.
And do a side-by-side post. That'll be cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. So we're still waiting on the Moto 360. Don't know when.
Yeah, and what I said at the end of that feature today is that these are both version 1.0 products. I think we can maybe hope that the 360 moves things along a little bit, but I don't know. Like I said, the hardware is the bigger problem than the software, and I think that with the right sort of hardware improvements in the 360, maybe that's going to be the, you know, more compelling in terms of either battery life or display, or hopefully, you know, just general improvements across the board.
Maybe. I'm worried that people are going to set themselves up for disappointment with that.
Maybe.
I want to hope that there's a reason the 360 took longer and we're going to see something new, but my gut tells me nope. It's just round, and it's going to have the same issues and drawbacks.
I think it's round. It's got whatever's different in the charging.
Yeah.
And it's round. And I still think it's going to be more expensive.
Nicer materials. And people are getting, their vision's getting clouded by the nicer materials, and it's going to be the exact same as the others.
Nicer materials. I think Phil can agree with me. There's absolutely nothing wrong with either the gear or the G-Watch. And I know Alex can, the G-Watch is built well. The gear is built well too.
Yep.
They're just version one products.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know. I think if the 360 is just basically the same, but in a nicer shell with auto brightness, that would be enough of an improvement for me.
Quit talking about it till we know what's in there. Cause you're gonna, I'm just going to send everybody to you when.
Okay.
Yeah. Pablo,
look, it's got something below the screen. It's some kind of sensor. Well, surely.
Yeah, Andy in the Andy in the Q&A says, watch the YouTube with the lady from Moto.io. She said it's a light sensor, so I'll have to go back and watch that. I guess. I mean, I'm trying to remember what did they tell me it was? Proximity. I thought they said proximity, and then that's where, you know, you have to have a place for the cables to actually go into the display.
We've already determined that the software is built to send ambient lighting data back to the kernel. So it's a hardware choice why things aren't there for now. You know, somebody's thinking of it. So it will happen.
So we'll see. We did a little poll this week. Jerry's weekly poll was, are you waiting for the Moto 360? You want to hear some results? 65% of the, how many people? What does it not say?
No, we don't say on the poll anymore. You have to go back to the admin panel.
Oh, lame.
It. Yeah.
Who started doing that?
I just follow orders.
I forget. Who do we use to do the poll? I'll go look right now.
Poll Daddy. Poll Daddy. As a matter of fact, I have it bookmarked. I can.
Let's see. I want to know how many. I have no problem saying how many people voted.
I agree. All that freedom to find the information. 7,061 votes as of this moment.
There you go. I mean, that's an important part of any poll. Otherwise, who cares?
I will start adding that. Thank you.
So 65% of 7,000. I mean, that's real money, folks.
That's Ryan asked in the Q&A if we're surprised about that. I am. I knew that there was going to be a good portion of people who were all ready for the 360 and don't care about anything else.
Sure.
But I did not think it would be 65% of the people that responded, even though it's a poll on Android Central for Android enthusiasts who tend to think the same in lots of things.
I see a lot of people saying they bought one just to tide them over until the 360. And I think that's fine. Andy also asked in the Q&A, you know, be honest, should we wait? No, I think if you want to get one and you want to experience Android Wear, absolutely buy one. I don't know which one I would tell you to buy. I'd say just buy either one. I mean, the price is so close. Buy whichever right. one you think looks better, and you'll have a better chance of reselling. At this point, I would opt for the G-Watch just because it fits better with custom bands.
You could also say that if you're buying one to tide yourself over, you could maybe go for the cheaper one, whichever one that is.
Yeah, but it's a $30 difference.
Yeah, I suppose.
Not insignificant.
It's like 15%, but... weird. Here in the States, it's a $30 difference. Right. Everywhere else, there's very little to no difference.
That's true.
Well, in the UK, the G-Watch is actually cheaper, so there's that.
I have no idea. I'm not an economist.
But they're both more expensive because UK.
Yeah.
They're both more expensive, but the G-Watch is the more expensive model. That is the cheaper model over here as compared to the US, where the Samsung one is more expensive. So who knows?
And I want to say everybody likes to trash the gear. Everybody, the G-Watch. If you're thinking about buying one, go somewhere where you can put the gear against your wrist. Because if the curve of it fits your wrist correctly and you don't have to worry about changing out the band or anything, the Gear Live is a really nice piece of equipment. But there's that factor. If it doesn't fit your wrist right and you're going to want to change the band, then you go back to maybe the G-Watch is the better choice.
And let's not forget we're expecting more stuff from other manufacturers as well. Yep. We had Asus and HTC, who we still haven't seen anything from. And we all know how good HTC is with the design. The smartphone space can be really interesting to see how that can transfer over to a watch, I think.
What did I say a long time ago? I would, you know, imagine HTC doing a Pebble-like, you know, Pebble Steel-like design.
I want to see HTC doing a Moto 360 style design.
Yeah, that's what I want to see.
So it's okay to be patient with these, I think. All right, that's it on Android Wear. I'm not tired of it. I'm still very much enjoying it. They need to also move the reset and restart buttons away from each other.
I did that too.
By the way, just saying. I'm going to talk a little more about the LG G3. It's finally sort of kind of available some places in the U.S. AT&T, you can go get it now. Sprint, you can go get it now. Verizon finally announced.
You can technically pre-order it, but apparently you can go get it now, too.
On which one?
On Sprint.
Yeah, no. They announced, hey, you can go get it today. Verizon finally told us what it would cost and when we can get it, and while I'm waiting for the page to load...
So Verizon's actually the 17th.
Yeah,
it's kind of cheap, isn't it, for a high-end phone on Verizon?
Yeah. Well, it's only I say, $599 without a contract, too, for a 32-gig phone, which normally that would be $649, even $699, which is kind of interesting.
And that's not a million miles away from other carriers, but the $99 on contract, I think, is pretty significant.
Yep. Right. Some people were saying that this is because it's coinciding with some sale for phones on contract, so I guess we'll see if it gets bumped up, but it seems like they know when their sales are going on, and if they wanted to launch it at $199, they would launch it at $199.
Yeah, and I mean Best Buy has sales going on and stuff like that too. I mean, but the point is, if you've got a contract to burn and you don't mind signing up for contracts, you know, you can get a really, really good phone for not a lot of money right now.
I'm gonna touch one eventually. Then I'm going to try to break it.
We should just not send you one and make you stew over it.
Well, that's the phone that I don't want to say anything. I have two very big reservations that I need to confirm or deny before I even say if I'm going to like it or not.
All right, I'll make sure you get one to play with.
One that I can break, potentially, maybe. All right. Not on purpose.
All right. Maybe I'll see what I can do on the way home today. Because it's nice. It's very nice. Somebody's asking, I forget where and I forget who, somebody was asking if it is good enough to take over the top spot in our best phones list. And I think, for me personally, there's HTC with boom sound, and then there's everything else. Really, those speakers, for me, make a big difference. What about you guys?
I did not care for the M8, and I have not been... you know, shy about saying so, but that's just a personal preference thing. I think the ease of use and friendliness out of the box, HTC just has everybody beat. I'm sorry.
I'm less in love with the hardware this time around, as I was, you know, astounded by how good the M7 was. Maybe that's because, you know, everybody's kind of stepped up their game a little bit. But after using the Nexus 5 for a really long time, the M8's kind of big and heavy and clunky. And it's kind of going, you know, my lust over having, you know, the solid metal body maybe is gone a little bit with the weight and how it's curved in the back and kind of slides out of your hand and rocks around on the table kind of unnecessarily. So, you know, I kind of, you know, I've held the G3 for all of like 15 minutes at this point when I saw Phil in New York. And that's kind of seems like a nice compromise with that really solid plastic construction that has a good feel to it. So
it's funny. I mean, it's bigger, but it's easier to hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it comes down to the height versus the G3. The height is more or less the same. I think the M8 might actually even be a little bit taller than the G3. But you get more screen for your, you know, for the surface area with the G3 compared to the M8. And if you're looking at, if that's a deciding factor for you, and of course, of the other things that the G3 offers that the M8 doesn't, you've got wireless charging in certain countries, not necessarily in the US, removable battery, another big one. I think it's probably, you know, the G3 maybe has the feature advantage, and there's the camera as well, which the G3 does really well, and the M8 is, maybe that's an area of weakness for it. It comes down to what you need out of a phone, and whether, you know, how big of a draw the metal design is, and whether the, you know, the features of the G3 and the bigger design maybe weigh that in the other direction.
And I think that, you know, HTC really obviously has something going for it with the design, and that it can catch your eye really well, and you think, oh, this looks really nice in the first 5-10 minutes you use it. But you know, like, it's just tall and heavy, and you don't notice that until you use it for a long time, that it can be, you know, there's a downside to having those huge speakers on the front. You know, it pushes everything out.
I want every phone to have a thin rubber type substance band around the edge like that S5 Active did, period. That's the most comfortable phone I've ever had to hold. You know, it's never going anywhere. It's just ugly as sin.
Well, the official, I'm not sure what you call it, but there's the official case for the G3 that is kind of like the hard shell case. Replaces the back panel, but it also extends around the side. And around the sides, you have kind of a rubbery texture. So
good job then, because that's, if you've held it, then you notice it, that makes a huge difference.
It kind of does. It makes it a little bit bigger, which is why I'm not using it, because the G3 is already a very big phone. But I think if you want that, you know, the extra grip, then that would be something to go with.
Anything else in G3?
I'm kind of curious to see where Andrew sits on the slipperiness of the M8, though, because we've all kind of weighed down that except him.
So I have whatever the darker one is. I don't have the lighter one, so this one's the slipperier of the two, correct?
Yeah.
I haven't used the other one, but I have nearly dropped it and kind of done this, you know, juggle it while I drop it onto the floor kind of thing several times at this point.
Have you almost dropped it enough times to now every time you touch it, you're afraid you're going to drop it?
Yes, absolutely.
That's where I got, and that's my problem with it.
And I don't want to, it's mostly I don't want to use it one-handed as often, because I'm afraid when I reach up for the notification bar that it's going to, you know, slip out the bottom of my hand. It's just, there's not a lot to hold on to there. It's the same consistency all the way around. It's kind of just like holding on to a, you know, a smooth river rock or something. It just slips out of your hand. So
that's why I'd been using the case for so long, and I finally took the case off this week just to try it again. Although now I'm back on a case again. I'm back in the dot view case. Hey, by the way, have you seen you can get themes on it now. You can put wallpaper. So I'm using
that's cool.
Is that leopard print?
Yeah, I like it to match my underwear. Yeah.
Oh, that's where I left those.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, you can do your own. You can use your own pictures, but, you know, you remember how it does it. It turns it into like a really rough 8-bit picture, and that just doesn't work too well in dot, you know, when a normal, you know, anyway, you can try.
We demand a Lloyd dot view background.
Oh,
picture.
Dude, yes. Somebody do that. How's that not been done yet? It's been like 2 hours.
Yes. So I should say that I have one of these kind of soft rubbery cases for the M8. So I'll slip that on there and see how that changes things. But you shouldn't have to do that. I don't know. Slippery phone is slippery. End of discussion there.
Yeah. What else? Chromecast got a really big update. Actually, a lot of big Google Apps updates this week. I mean, Gmail got better Google Drive sharing. Great. Cool.
Which, I still don't use that.
The camera will do remote triggers with Android Wear. Everybody gets all excited about that. I have zero use for that.
Hey, that was cool for 4 seconds.
So am I right in understanding that you don't get a live preview on your watch? No, all you'd get is a shutter button.
Right.
Aside from any bandwidth issues with Bluetooth, how quickly would that destroy the battery?
I would destroy it, but it also means, I mean, I'm trying to understand what situation that's appropriate to.
Taking a self photo, I could see.
But I mean, your hand is...
Yeah.
So you have your watch with you're holding your hand up, and then you have to hit it with what? I don't know.
Maybe it would be useful if you have your watch paired to your Galaxy camera or something like that, I guess.
Right.
But that's not a very common use case. I don't know. You'll be using it with a tripod or something, I guess. It's kind of like a cool technical showcase, I think. It's not something that's going to be practically... It's a
good example of an Android app on your phone interfacing with Wear properly.
And yeah, this would not be the first time Google has done something just to show how it's done.
Yeah.
But Chromecast really is the big thing. You can now mirror... Oh, how many phones? Was it like 8?
It's about a dozen.
Okay.
I think they expanded the list a little bit from I/O. I think the G3 is on there now. It wasn't before.
G2, G3, G Pro 2, Galaxy S4, S5, Note 10.1, and then
the M7, Google, but not the M8.
M7, but not the M8. The M7 Google Play Edition, GS4 Google Play Edition, Nexus 4, Nexus 5, Nexus 7, 2013.
Help me out here. I was getting confused because some of them... were working out of the box, and some needed the update to the Chromecast app.
So the only ones that work out of the box would be something, a Nexus or a Google Play Edition.
Or the everything else, developer preview, I guess.
Right. So
yeah.
Everything else needs the new Chromecast app. So that's just the way that the software is baked in. If you have a Nexus 4, Nexus 5, Nexus 7, all you do is just go into the settings. It'll just show up, cast screen. You'll see it under... display. Otherwise, you just launch the Chromecast app and tap it and it'll launch. But it's kind of interesting because the Chromecast app, up to this point, people install it once to set up their Chromecast and then never really touch it. So,
I mean, you don't even need it like once the Chromecast is...
Right. So it's kind of going to be a tough discoverability thing. A lot of people are going to have to go reinstall the Chromecast app to try this out. And, it's in beta and it's restricted to certain devices, but it's restricted to some of the most popular devices out there. You would think that they would want more people to, be aware of it.
You've got to think this is something that's coming in L. It's already in the developer preview baked into the notification shade.
Right.
You would imagine
it's baked into the notification shade on 4.4 as well.
That's true.
But it's not if you're going into Nexuses.
Yeah, if you're going into it with updates to the new version of Android, then you would think Google would find some way of, if not putting it in the notification shade, at least having the option there in a menu in the system, not just having to require a third-party app.
And that's why it requires a third-party app now. On other phones, you go into display and you have display mirroring. It's showing Samsung's All Share thing or Miracast or whatever else, DLNA or whatever else they're doing. So Google has to figure out how they're going to separate those two so you know how you get to your Chromecast, how you get to your other device. That could be confusing.
Incidentally, how dead is Miracast right now?
Oh.
So this works so much better than Miracast. It's not even funny. The latency is probably 10 or 15% of what the latency on Miracast is. The setup is instant. It just happens. There's no weird disconnects. There's no weird things. And Chromecast is less than half the price of a good Miracast adapter.
Come on. Miracast was dead the moment it was released and anybody tried it.
Yeah. But it really is now. I mean, the interesting thing was Miracast was the supported way on Nexus devices to mirror your screen to other devices. And now it's, this replaces it, and it does a great job of it.
It was the WiMAX of screencasting. Never stood a chance.
It was not. Good.
I want to say, I had last night. I was playing with it on the L preview. It actually locked my Nexus 5 up that even holding the power button down would not reset it, and I had to let it sit there and get screaming hot until it shut itself off.
Yeah, that's happened every single time. If you let the screen time out on your Nexus 5, it will never come back on if you're mirroring.
This is on the L preview, though, isn't it?
Right.
Yes.
That's not a daily driver, guys.
Among other reasons. That's just a good example of this not working, because it works perfectly on the Nexus 4. You let your screen time out for an hour, and you turn it back on, and your TV will light back up. So there's definitely dragons inside of there.
But it's cool. I like the idea.
Yeah. It's going to make our job a whole lot easier.
My daughter, Mia, loved it because I turned the camera on while it was mirroring so she could see herself on the TV.
We talked about this briefly, about what kind of apps this kills, what kind of apps no longer need to have proper Chromecast support. Alex brought up the point that, of course, you know, watch ESPN or some streaming app, obviously you want to throw that straight to the TV. But these other apps, I featured one in Apps of the Week that was, you know, just a drawing app that just mirrors what you're drawing on the screen up to the Chromecast. That doesn't need to exist anymore, because you can just share your whole screen and it's just there, and you could use any drawing app you want or any photo sharing app. You don't need a special one that, you know, is Chromecast compliant. So that kind of opens up the use cases of Chromecast over the, you know, relatively limited developer adoption of Chromecast.
Yeah, I think this is always a relatively, I don't want to say obvious, but it was the clear endpoint to where this whole Chromecast thing was going. You know, we started with having streaming services on there, and you know, the obvious thing that everyone wanted to do, and that there were some third party apps for, was just straight up mirroring your phone to your Chromecast over Wi-Fi. Sorry, Jerry, you can talk now.
I was going to say I would have said the word obvious. I agree with you completely. It's who didn't see this coming. It's just natural.
Right. And you kind of wonder where this is going to go with the tab casting in Chrome. You know, are we going to see better tab casting from Chromebooks on the local Wi-Fi network? Because right now it has to send it through the internet up and then download back down to your Chromecast. So you'll wonder if they're going to make some improvements there as well.
Really? So it's capped by your upload speed, even if it's over a local network?
Yeah. It's capped to 720p even too, where we're mirroring 1080p or higher displays right now. So you need a pretty powerful computer and a good upload speed to be able to do good tab casting.
Yeah. That must be pretty rough for you there with your 100 meg upload.
Yeah, 100 meg up and down, you know. I might boost up to the gigabit just so I can get a smoother tab casting experience.
We were talking with a company about testing something last week or 2 weeks ago, and they're like, hey Andrew, we got to double check your bandwidth before we can bother even trying any of this. And I just immediately shot back, oh god, here comes the bragging. and they were like floored by Andrew's internet.
I just screen. Responded with a screenshot, and I was like, I hope 1 millisecond pings are low enough for you.
Dropped the mic, walked off stage. Let's get into some Q&A questions, because I feel like we've been ignoring them. I want to start at the bottom. Phil, you're looking slimmer. Good job, says Chris. I'm just going to let that one be sticky there at the top, I think, for a while. Thank you. I learned to drink one beer at a time. That has helped.
Oh, Pablo's got a good one. So, guys, what's your take on the removal of most GPE devices from Google Play? Is Google getting ready for One/Silver?
I think Google's getting ready for new Google Play editions. I think Silver is probably still quite a long way off just yet. That seems to be the general consensus. We've heard all this stuff about supposedly a GPE GS5 coming. I think it's only natural that with new devices coming out later in the year, you'd also see more GPEs.
And one, Android One is for the lower-end market. There's no indication those are going to be sold through Google Play either, exclusively or anything like that. The only weird thing about it for me was removing the G-Pad 8.3, which is like 7 months old. I'm sure they didn't sell many of them, but you know, God help them if they thought that they were going to sell a lot of them in the first place. It just seemed a little weird to remove that one when they still have the S4 available.
Look, let's be honest. A device like the G-Pad GPE, they would have done one production run and just sold all of them. And the fact that it's no longer there probably just means they don't have any left yet.
It was actually a pretty good tablet.
I like the GPE a lot more than the regular one.
I want one now.
Maybe I'll send you mine.
Now that I can't have one, I want one.
Well, you tried the Z Ultra GPE. You had that fun experience. So.
Ara, is it Ara or Era? She should tell me, because I see her everywhere. So now for a real question. I think she had another one in there that might not have been real. Has anyone used an Android Wear device with a Moto X? And do you use any of the X features, like active display, now that the smartwatch mimics them? Jerry?
To the first part of that question, yes. I use everything with the Moto X because it's the best phone ever made. Send an email, whatever you want to do, complain. All kidding aside, absolutely. I don't look. The active display is what really sold me on the Moto X. And with Android Wear, I don't need it as much. I mean, yeah, that's a very good observation that I noticed myself doing.
Hmm. So I'm kind of the same. I was got back to using the Moto X again this past week just because, you know, we're expecting a new one sometime in the next month or so. The sort of on-screen features, the active display and a smartwatch do fill some of the same features. I think it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves, especially when we're expecting a new Moto X at the same time as we're expecting the 360. So I don't know. Maybe there's a bit of overlap there, but then... Yeah, we'll just have to see how that evolves, I think. Maybe having lots of different ways to do the same thing isn't necessarily a bad idea.
I'm excited about that. That means that the people who engineered the last Moto X will have to think up great, cool stuff for the next, not necessarily this one that's coming, but the next one after that.
You know, we're coming around on a year since they came up with the ideas for the original Moto X, or, you know, we're past a year from when they started that kind of development. So they've had another year while Android Wear was coming up with all these ideas to enhance some of those hands-off technologies and active display and things like that.
Now hit the top, Phil, the top of the Q&A.
Hang on.
Perfect timing.
Oh! Well, because I found one I want to read, and I'm not leaving it. Okay. Chris says, I've been playing a lot of Ingress, walked 30 miles in the last 3 days, poor old hunting. What are your thoughts about iOS users joining soon? By all means, absolutely. It's a good thing. More people playing Ingress, the better Ingress is. Right?
Yeah.
All right, now which one did Jerry want to read?
Well, it was about Motorola.
Looking back, how much of a role did Motorola play in Android's future? Android One, Moto G, Moto E, Chrome syncing, Motorola Connect, personal unlocking, trusted Bluetooth. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, you would expect that given that they were owned by Google for the best part of 2 years.
Even if they weren't. I mean, those were, you know, I don't know how many of those features came out of Google, or, you know, if it was just whatever, it's Motorola and it's people in Motorola now, never mind who's actually signing the checks. I don't know. But, I mean, regardless, those are all really good features, and I'm glad some of them are being kind of sucked back upstream.
And Google's never been shy about reabsorbing features from manufacturer UIs back into Android. You could think, would you even have the Google Now launcher if it went for HTC Blink Feed?
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, we still don't know what exactly everything that's going to be in L when it finally launches, too. You know, we don't know what kind of other things are being held. That could be other features borrowed or inspired from some of these manufacturers.
Jeremy wants to know, has the use of Android Wear devices changed the way you use your phone throughout the day? I don't think so.
It's the same advantage that you have with Pebble, where it's just easier to
Wow, what was that?
That was weird.
I'm Video sorry, I didn't know what that button did.
We're back. That was crazy.
That's called doing it live right there.
Wow. Yep. Is everybody okay? Thanks, Google.
I think so.
Is the Q&A still there? Are all you guys still there? So it has changed the way we do live podcasts throughout the day. I don't know.
You know, one thing it has made a big change for me, archiving email.
Yes.
I love how easy that is to do.
Yes.
Which probably ties in very well with why my battery life is so poor.
And it makes annoying emails a little less annoying because you can just get rid of them right then. You don't have to see them again later.
Yeah.
So yeah, that has helped. Justin wants to know, I'm going on a road trip in the U.S. next month for a few weeks, and I want to use an Unlock Nexus 5 from the U.K. Can you advise me what plan or carrier would be good for internet for that time? In the U.K., we would just pop in a pay-as-you-go SIM, same as the U.S. Yeah, you can get Timo. I think AT&T's got one that's not bad, too.
I would go with AT&T Go Phone if you're going to want LTE and road tripping, assuming you're going across multiple states and things like that.
UK Nexus 5 will not get LTE on either T-Mobile or AT&T. Right. So you're stuck on Nexus
Beam. UK Nexus 5, yeah.
Yep.
I would go Cricket if I were you.
Yeah, and if you're not going to get LTE either way.
I can't believe that I'm saying this, but I would stop and buy a Cricket prepaid SIM. $50 gets you a month of calls and texts and 2.5 gigs of data.
Yeah, I would say if you can't, I mainly said AT&T because you can walk into any AT&T store and they'll give you a SIM for free when you load up a month, and they'll just let you choose a phone number and you're just out the door in 10 minutes. Cricket, even though now they're owned by AT&T, can be a little bit of an issue. You're probably going into a supermarket to find a SIM and calling in to activate and things like that. If you want as little hassle as possible, I would say AT&T or Metro PCS, probably, since, you know, T-Mobile stores will hand those out.
Yeah, I remember walking into a T-Mobile booth in San Francisco and just picking up a prepaid SIM from them.
Yeah, and Walmart would be a good choice, too. Thing.
If you're going to be somewhere like San Francisco or New York or Washington, D.C.
I guess if you're road tripping, not so much.
Yeah, if you're driving around the country, go AT&T, I'm sorry. But
yeah,
don't apologize.
And the nice thing is that, you know, you'll be in and out of there really quickly. You don't have to worry about buying a SIM online, having it shipped beforehand and crazy stuff like that.
And I don't know how aware you are of America's crazy, stupid cell phone industry. I said Cricket before. Cricket is AT&T. Mm-hmm. They resell it under their name. There's lots of those things. Basically, if you shy away from Sprint or Verizon or any of their MVNOs, you'll be fine. But try to find one that uses AT&T's network.
Looking through the stories we had lined up, is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
I'm looking back through the Q&A. Everything's all out of sorts since we podcast apocalypse happened.
Too many good questions. It's shut down.
Any word on Google Voice? No.
No.
Google Voice is dead.
I tell you, and that's the one thing I'm really missing on Android Wear right now, because my wife will text me, and I have to stop what I'm doing and grab the phone. I can't just lean over in the car and yell into it and have it work. I want that.
Go ahead, Phil.
No, I'm just waiting.
The one thing I have noticed lately, which is nice, is you can actually receive emoji, which is cool, and you can receive picture messages from T-Mobile or Sprint subscribers. And they just get emailed to you, and that works consistently. So at least you're not just completely left out of the loop when you get a text with no picture attached and it makes no sense because the picture is not attached.
I just want to receive a damn notification without going in the app and manually refreshing. That's all they need.
Notifications to clear when I view them on one device. But
you know. Every now and then I have issues. I think it's just been in the morning with the watch reconnecting. Like, I wasn't getting any notifications this morning till I restarted the watch.
And that you have it before, and I've never had any issues with that.
And maybe it's an L thing, because I'm back on L right now. I don't know. I haven't really, debugged it at all.
I haven't been able to consistently use the Nexus 5. It's been sitting on the charger with no SIM in it since.
Well,
try an L.
If you have L on it, it has to stay on the charger.
Yeah,
it's not. It's just not the most stable or good experience.
My
right
watch
now.
Made it through the day yesterday, but my phone did not. And that was kind of funny. I thought it was funny.
If you expected anything different, than your sure. expectations for complaining.
Right, I'm not complaining, Google.
No, yeah. No, and again, I think it's worth saying if you're out there playing on L, and especially I was going through the issues tracker today, which is like full of feature requests and things that shouldn't be there, and I'm reading through it, just I'm dying. It was so horrible, so much bad stuff. Again, this is why we're not like writing, this is coming in L, because we don't know. It's so early. It's a developer preview. It's not, you know, don't even call it user beta or anything. It's just for developers to take a look at and start getting apps ready. And things absolutely will change. You know, obviously they're going to need some way to clear all the notifications at one time. You know, just a whole bunch of stuff's going to change. So relax.
And I think the way that iMore has handled that with all the dev previews of macOS and iOS is, you know, okay, guys, the developer previews are here, and if you're not a developer, maybe you shouldn't expect too much out of this. You shouldn't use your only phone and flash it to L.
Yeah, but not even them, because beta has always meant whatever the hell Google wanted it to. You know, look how long Gmail was in beta. So, it is what...
But this is the first time we've had beta versions of
right.
Android. You know, not even beta, alpha versions of Android coming out.
Yeah, just...
Yeah,
That's all I have to say about that.
I want to flash Android L to my Nexus 1, and since I can't, I'm going to file a bug report.
Yeah, but how awesome would that be?
Still suck on 2.3.4.
Imagine the battery life would be measured in minutes.
Oh.
Someone somewhere is porting it to the HD2 right now.
And, yes. And where's the trackball support in L is what I want to know.
Alright, anything else? Should we call it a day?
I think we're good.
That was a fun little different podcast. I like it. Well, if you want to, you can email us. I think I did get an email, actually, that I might want to read here. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Cool.
It's
been a while.
And I keep skipping them, so...
I thought people weren't sending them.
No, this was a good question. Ooh, I gotta dismiss... Hey, look, there's a phone call. It's what it looks like when it comes in. Say hi to my wife.
Hi, Mr. Dickinson.
No, I can't talk right now. I'm podcasting. Gavin writes, hey guys, love the podcast. I was super excited about the LG G3 launch, and I couldn't wait to buy it until I heard chatter about future phones with 64-bit processors. Should I wait for the 64-bit phones, or should I just get the G3?
Get the G3. If 64-bit is your reason for waiting, just get the G3.
Why?
64-bit phones worth buying aren't going to be around. Worth buying relative to high-end stuff that we have now aren't going to be around until spring 2015.
You're not going to use any modern phone and say, dang, I wish this is 64-bit.
Yeah.
Gimmick.
The point.
Gimmick.
Yeah.
She's asking about, do I remember where a beignet place was in the French Quarter? And I'm pretty sure I do.
I'm pretty sure you do, too.
That's a good question.
Cafe,
that's important.
Cafe Beignet. Which is actually
sounds delicious.
It was really good. All right, yeah, that was the only email I had. So, podcast at android.central.com. Podcast at androidcentral.com. My wife.
You need to ask Phil about popular bakeries in his area.
Yes. Ask me about beignets. Find us all on Google Plus. Just search our names. That is the easiest way to find us, the best way to find us. Be sure to follow all the Android Central things on Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter. I need to get Instagram going again. I got to find that password. That would be a good thing to do, I think. We could have some fun with that.
I need the credentials to that too then.
Yeah. Somebody's got
throwing up some pictures.
We'll track it down. As we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. You can call them at 888-468-6158. By the way, if you use code AC10 at checkout, you get 10% off everything just for listening to the podcast. So go buy stuff.
Even the M8.U case.
They got all sorts of like cool stuff in there. I mean, I don't talk to those guys enough, and I just see things pop up in feeds. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's neat. I think that's it. Are we done? Should we go? Until next week?
I think we're done.
I think we're done.
All right. For everybody listening live, listening recorded, listening later, listening on video, watching on video, mirroring over Chromecast, thank you. See you next week.
See you later.
Bye.
Hey, you, I need your help. I need 5 quick minutes of your time for a short anonymous survey. Your answers will help match our podcast with advertisers that best fit the sensibilities of our podcast and its listeners like you. Here's the deal. All you have to do is complete the survey and you will be entered in an ongoing monthly raffle to win a $100 Amazon gift card. We promise not to share or sell your email address and we won't send you an email unless you win. So go to www.podsurvey.com/android. That's podsurvey.com/android to take our survey and get a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Thanks!